At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'll be your host today for this Friday, April 12th, 2024. And before we head into the weekend, we're going to do today what we come here to do every day at 4 o'clock Pacific, and that is to try and leave a more educated and better investor so that we can reach our financial goals. Now, I have a lot of things to talk about today, including some things that I picked, but hopefully we hear from you. We always answer your voicemail questions. We look towards our iTunes review questions and now our YouTube comments to see what you're interested in. But honestly, I prefer you when you call in live. So please feel free to do that over the next hour. You know the number, but I'll say it again, 888-99-CHART. And with that being said, talk about the market in a little bit and run down those show topics that I just briefly mentioned. But right after we answer the first caller question now.
Hello, I wanted to get your guys' opinion on ticker symbol BTU. I just wanted to get your opinion on the space and what you think for the short term. Thank you.
So ticker symbol BTU is Peabody Energy Corporation, and it is a coal company. And their business segments include thermal coal, metallurgical coal, and their Powder River Basin segment. Now, their sales revenue has been lackluster over the past 5 years. The annualized growth rate is about negative 2.3%. And their debt levels are actually okay, only about $400 million on a $3 billion market cap company. But their cash flow has been falling, and their profitability has been falling as well. And the primary reason for that is because coal has had a lot of competition, especially with some historically low levels of natural gas pricing. And so what does that mean for Peabody? Well, they even said it themselves. They, in their most recent forecast, said that growth is going to be lackluster. And so even though they're currently priced at about a 0.9 price to book relative to the industry of 0.6 and a forward-looking price to earnings of 6.9 relative to the industry of 0.9, the market thinks this is too expensive. Their short interest right now is 13%. So those people are betting that the price of this company is going to fall. And it looks like from a technical perspective, it's towards the bottom of its support range. And so I wouldn't be surprised if this starts to break down. I think that even though this company looks okay fundamentally, the growth story just isn't there. Growth does not seem to be there. They admit it themselves. So I wouldn't buy into this company right now. The market is signaling to you by that 13 to 14% short interest that the price is going to head lower. Thanks for the call. We got a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so. And here is some of what we have planned, time permitting. My main focus point concerns this topic, the dangerous myth of the new normal. The odds are always, often, against those that believe this time is different. So we'll talk about some historical, quote, new normal scenarios, how that kind of became a famous phrase within finance, and what the prognostications of people in the past, how those turned out for the 2010s and the early 2020s. We'll also talk about bank earnings. We will focus in on what JP Morgan said today in their latest financial release. We'll take a look at how their Q1 went, as well as what they project going forward. We'll also talk about more broadly what Wall Street expects of company profits. Right now, it looks like Wall Street is pricing in some pretty high levels of profits, and that's even in the wake of what seems to be a longer, higher for longer interest rate environment, and potentially some geopolitical tensions. So we'll talk a little bit about broad corporate profits as well. And should we have time at the end of the show, we will touch base on Morgan Stanley, who there was an announcement today that their wealth management division is being investigated. So we'll talk about who's investigating them, why they're investigating them, and what that could mean for the company. Before we head to a break, why don't we talk about the market today? So U.S. stocks ended lower today, finishing pretty near the worst levels for the day. The Dow and S&P lost ground for their second straight week. The NASDAQ now down 3 weeks in a row. And momentum was really leading the charge downward. Momentum gave back pretty much all the gains they had yesterday after the release of PPI. And so a lot of that underperformance was in banks, semis, airlines, medtech, biotech, those companies that were hoping to see some interest rate cuts sooner rather than later. And because of that, you know, treasury yields looked higher on the week overall. Gold finished up 10 basis points, even though it breached the 2400 level at one point throughout the day. And there's also a focus on the latest ramp up in geopolitical tensions. There was a report today that says the U.S. expects maybe as much as 100 drones to be launched from Iran towards Israel as soon as potentially today. So I think a lot of people are keeping their eyes on that situation and heading into the weekend took positioning as such. Also, bank earnings were in focus. There's a lack of net interest income guidance raises from the banks, so the market is always looking to see if the consensus is going to be beat. So that didn't look too good from a bank perspective. Overall, in the week, from the bearish side, there was hotter core CPI, some hawkish repricing of the Fed, upward pressure on yields, and again, the potential rise in geopolitical tensions. On the positive side, core PPI did come in lower than expected. There's a more favorable core PCE takeaway from those key PPI details. And earnings season was flagged so far as likely supportive for stocks, as well as Fed speak, not really deviating or abandoning from their pivot narrative and really reinforcing the short-term tapering of quantitative tightening. Now, heading into a short break, and on the other side, we'll take your finance and investment questions, as well as talk about some stories for the day. Please remember, you can call anytime. Our phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it.
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
How you doing, Luke? I'm calling about FRT, Federal Realty Investment Trust. It's a REIT. A lot of REITs have been beaten down this year. This doesn't seem too bad, actually. The last 6 months, it's been rising from 85, now around 100 area. Wanted to get your thoughts. This is a good issue point. This is a good company to be in. Dividend sustainable, all that good stuff. Love what you guys do, and you know, glad that you took over for Justin. Find it to be a hell of a podcaster. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the kind words. But let's get to the question, which is Federal Realty Investment Trust. And that company, ticker FRT, is a mixed-use REIT. And it's relatively small, about $8 billion in market cap, and its debt levels are pretty modest, about $4 billion. So there's a lot of room for them to lever up in order to make new acquisitions. Now, the first thing we look at when we look at REITs is how diversified are they and what type of business are they in? So it's pretty well diversified in terms of geography, and it's got all sorts of customers from Home Depot to Albertsons, AMC Theaters, Bank of America building. So it's got a good list of properties and top tenants. Now, you asked about the dividend specifically. Most people invest in REITs because it's an income-focused investment, right? And so is this dividend sustainable? Absolutely. Interestingly enough, FRT is pretty well known, and that's maybe even why its stock price hasn't fallen as much as some REITs. And that's because they've had 56 years, I believe, certainly over 50 years of consecutive dividend increases. And their revenue grew over the past 5 years pretty well for a REIT in that space. And their cash flow looks pretty positive as well. I think that overall, now may be a good time to get in the REIT space. We talked this week so far about when you want to be invested in REITs, and certainly this year has beaten them down. Really, this past 2 years has beaten them down with the rise in interest rates. So, you know, I have no problem with this. I think the reasons why the market is pricing this the way it is because of the consistent dividend raises and the consistent dividend payouts. So if you're looking for a good dividend payer that has done well and has a track record of doing well, I think FRT is a good one to be. Thanks for the call. Whenever possible, will you like to play two in a row? So let's do that now.
Hi, Luke. Thank you so much for all your help and services. We learn a lot. I wanted to know from you to start a position, what's your take on ACLS, Alpha Charlie Larry Sam. I've been monitoring the stock for a few months. I would like to know, is it now getting into a buy range? Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Take care.
So ACLS is, hopefully I pronounced this correctly, Axcelis Technologies, Inc. And so they manufacture semiconductor chips. They're an industrial company. And it is a $3.5 billion market cap company. So it's a small cap company. And their balance sheet looks okay. They have pretty minimal debt. And honestly, they don't even capitalize their business through issuing a lot of shares. It looks like they have a decent amount of cash flow that has been improving over the past 5 years. So they got $75 million on debt on a $3.5 billion market cap company, and they've actually bought back shares over the past 5 years. Looks like earlier in the year, they had some earnings upgrades, but that was subsequently downgraded in June. And that could be one of the reasons why over the past 3 months, really year to date, actually, the performance of this company has been negative because of the earnings downgrades. Now, as always, we need to look at relative valuation. It's trading at a price to book of about 4 relative to its average of 3.7. Its PDE is 14.8. These are not too egregiously expensive numbers, in my opinion. This is a tough one. So certainly you don't want to invest in a company when it's falling like this. It looks like it broke its support level back in January, and it's just been heading downward. Its relative strength has fallen as well. It was really high in terms of relative strength in July, and it's fallen. It's still doing better than the market overall, but it seems to me from a technical perspective, its momentum is heading downward. And so looking at this, you kind of see where it's been over the past 6 to 7 months for the people that are watching this on YouTube. And so I think it's still trying to find some support. So I like this company. I think the cash flow and profitability trends are very positive, but I would wait until an opportunity where it actually finds some support after breaking down recently. Thanks for the call. Now let's go to a YouTube question. We love it when you leave comments on our YouTube videos. And this question is about a fan favorite, which is Barrick, ticker G-O-L-D, which if you're seeing me struggle to pull it up, I always have to type it in or else you'll get the spot price of gold. So Barrick Gold Corporation is a miner and it mines in gold and other minerals. And so it's pretty large. It's a $43 billion market cap company and its debt levels are modest. We actually hold this company for our clients. And so we do like Barrick Gold. And so we actually talked a little bit about yesterday about some of the things that are driving gold demand, be it, countries that are trying to remove themselves from the threat of being sanctioned by the U.S., people that need to find a safe haven asset because they believe there's potential economic or geopolitical turmoil in the future. And those people are apparently buying it from Costco now. So all of the dynamics that tend to allow the price of gold to go up seem to be appearing right now. And so this company is going to do well when that is the case. And they're not highly levered. They're running at about a 7x EBIT interest coverage ratio, which means they got a lot of room to run if they want to take on some additional debt. Looks like the $4 billion in debt they have was pushed off pretty far. But, you know, like I said, we hold Barrick for clients. We think it's a good time to be in these miners. We think this is a particularly good miner. And certainly the trend of the price of gold over the past couple months has been positive for this and for other companies like it. Thanks for watching the video and leaving us a comment. We love those. Now it's Friday and we're moving into a short break, so feel free to call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke?
I've heard you say multiple times that you prefer shorter duration treasury bonds.
You're the best person to ask it.
Can you explain to me why it is more advisable?
The symbol is UNIT. Wondering what you thought about this REIT, if it would be a good time to get in.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
So I was thinking, is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR. If you could run that down for me.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Investors, the goal of achieving financial freedom requires unbiased information, strategic planning, and determination. Congratulations! You've found the podcast that is dedicated to helping you succeed. InvestTalk.
Now, our main focus point concerns this topic: the dangerous myth of the new normal. And typically, whenever there's some sort of adverse event, people think we're going to learn from it. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. And so let's take you back to 2008, right? Financial collapse, systemic issues within the credit markets, financial markets, the whole financial system. And so in March of 2009, someone from McKinsey coined the term the new normal. And so this person, Ian Davis, what they expected was there to be shifts in the wake of the financial crisis in terms of the landscape of leverage and regulation, consumption growth, everything. And so what he outlined was a future where companies that were highly levered would see reduced profit margins, that investors wouldn't stand for it, that government regulation would stiffen, and that overall U.S. consumption growth would fall. So how did he fare? Well, contrary to some of his predictions, specifically the corporate one, U.S. corporate profits did not suffer at all. In fact, they've soared to unprecedented levels despite the heightened regulatory environment and despite the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010. He was right in terms of slowdown in U.S. consumption growth, but that was mostly due to a wholesale shift of where wealth was distributed. Now, there was a similar prediction, if you will, from Bill Gross, from PIMCO, if you don't know who that is. And he predicted that there was actually going to be not only a long-term environment characterized by this deleveraging, but that America's economic influence would be diminished because of it, and that the stagnant corporate profits would actually make bonds a better investment than stocks. Now, for us, when we think about our time frame, we know that stocks tend to outperform bonds in the long run. That wasn't always the case, actually. Back in the early 1900s, bonds tended to outperform stocks. So dynamics can change. However, he was wrong. But there were many that were influenced by his predictions, and so they moved their investments from equities to bonds, expecting those lower returns in stocks, and being more comfortable with having capital protected by fixed income. So what happened? Well, the actual financial outcome starkly contrasted with Bill Gross's predictions. Equities, particularly U.S. equities, have significantly outperformed bonds since 2010, reflecting that the stock market has been resilient, and a lot of that is related to that corporate profit. Now, these divergences in expectation versus reality, if you will, is a common psychological dynamic in financial markets. Investors tend to forecast based on the prevailing sentiments, and then once they formulated their opinion, in spite of what changes in economic fundamentals, in spite of what changes in front of their eyes, they tend to stay with that original hypothesis, sometimes to their own detriment. And so even though these forecasts were grounded in a logical assessment of the economic conditions at the time, it still points out the complexities and perilousness of predicting so far off in the future and adhering too rigidly to your own biases. And more than anything, it serves as another reminder of the perpetual challenges of financial forecasting and what can happen to you and your financial goals should you not adapt to the data in front of you. Now, on Fridays, we generally make some time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list now. The two-year treasury yield is up to 4.894%. For perspective, last week it was 4.721. 22 weeks back, it was 5.05. And 120 weeks ago, more than 2 years, it was 0.64. The 10-year treasury yield was at 45.18% today. Last week it was 43.73. 22 weeks back, it was 4.63%. And 117 weeks back, it was 1.762%. Gold was priced at $2,344 per ounce after breaching the 2,400 level at some point during the day. Last week, it was $2,325. 11 weeks ago, it was $2,018. 92 weeks ago, it was $1,809. Silver today was at $27.94 an ounce. Last week, it was at $27.57. 9 weeks ago, it was at $22.80. And 101 weeks ago, it was at $23.94. Oil was selling for $85.66 a barrel today. Last week it was at $87.25. 9 weeks ago it was at $78.04. And 101 weeks ago it was at $97. The national average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.63 per gallon. Last week it was $3.58. 9 weeks back it was $3.10. And 93 weeks ago it was $4.25. In California, it was averaging $5.43 per gallon. For comparison, in Texas, today gas is averaging $3.21. That is $2.22 less per gallon than the gas I have to use to fill my car. Still to come, after we get back from this break, highlights from the KPP Premium newsletter. But hopefully, before then, or maybe even after, you give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne. HackerOne.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin, this is Justin calling from Okinawa, Japan. I had a question about ticker symbol ADC for a long-term investment in my Roth. I don't have any reach in my portfolio. Started a small position at the current price. It looks like there's quite a bit of support around the $50 range or so if it drops a little bit more.
Yeah, so ADC, Agri Realty Corporation, is a retail REIT. And so they have a bunch of different tenants pretty well spread out throughout the country. Some pretty big tenants, as you can see here, Walmart is one of them. I know this because I just looked at this. So Walmart's one of them, Best Buy, CVS, Dollar Tree, Kroger, all big retail stores, not a lot of mom and pop stores, and pretty well spread out in terms of geographic diversity. It's on the smaller side of REITs, $5.7 billion, and it's only got about $2.4 billion in debt. And so it's not overly leveraged at all whatsoever. But the relative strength has been in the bottom half, I would say, of the retail REIT space. And so what you don't see, like we just saw the REIT we looked at earlier, is you don't see a lack of underperformance here relative to the market. It kind of lost its strength here at the end of 2022, and it's been trailing downward pretty precipitously over the past 52 weeks. It's down about 15%, but this isn't new, right? You know this because of what has been happening with interest rates. So REITs pretty much all across the board with select few have been suffering in the same way. Now, retail REITs, especially ones that invest in these large businesses, I think are on the better half of REITs. Again, we talked yesterday about storage REITs that were great. Some gambling REITs are good as well. I have no problems with ADC. I think it's a fine run REIT. I don't think it's overly leveraged. I think its cash flow has been improving over the past 5 years, which is really all you can ask for this REIT. So I think if you're looking for an income REIT, this is a good one. Maybe not as stable as some of the other ones. Its dividend yield has been kind of all over the place, and it's been less than consistent in terms of its dividend growth, with the exception of the past 5 years. But overall, I don't see any red flags in this company. Thanks for the call. Now, the KPP Premium newsletter was finished today, and it will be distributed to subscribers tomorrow morning. And I have a preview for all of you. In the market conditions section, we explained that stocks fell today amid earnings reports from several big banks that left investors disappointed. Geopolitical concerns were also weighing on the broader market amid headlines that Israel is gearing up for a strike from Iran. The first half of the trading day was particularly bad for bank stocks like JPMorgan Chase, down over 5.9% due to a pessimistic interest income forecast, and Citigroup, which saw a 2.8% decline following disappointing first quarter profits. The tech sector wasn't spared either, with companies like Nvidia, Tesla, and Meta Platforms each dropping over 1%. A broader market sell-off was triggered by minor disappointing news amidst a run-up amplified by concerns over the U.S. inflation outlook, which diminished expectations for an imminent Federal Reserve rate cut. On the inflationary front, import prices in the U.S. increased for the third consecutive month in March, driven by rising costs in energy and food. This uptick brought the year-on-year increase to 0.4%, the first such rise since January of the previous year, underscoring the sustained inflationary pressures despite being below excessive levels. However, the overall economic indicators are mixed. Looking forward, the economic outlook remains tethered to inflation dynamics and monetary policy adjustments. There's more commentary detail that you can find in the newsletter. In the stock ideas section, we highlighted a manufacturer and distributor of premium automotive parts used in the maintenance, service, and repair of vehicles in the automotive aftermarket industry. The company focuses on the original equipment and original equipment services market with a product lineup of replacement parts for engine management, ignition, emissions, and fuel systems, as well as temperature control products. Fundamentals suggest that the stock is undervalued with a PDE ratio of 11 and expectations of double-digit growth over the next year. The company carries minimal debt on its balance sheet, and the stock price seems to be consolidating in the low 30 range. And we also looked at a provider of marine services to the global oil and natural gas industries and an operator of medium-sized oil tankers. The company operates in two segments, tanker and ship-to-ship transfer. The vast majority of the revenue comes from the tanker segment. It trades at a 4 PDE ratio with a $20 a share in free cash flow. The stock pays a 1.7% dividend yield. We name names in the newsletter, so subscribe anytime at investtalk.com. Now let's shift gears back to something I just can't stop talking about, apparently, and that's bank earnings. And so we'll take a look at JP Morgan specifically, who reported first quarter profit that surpassed estimates. But shares still fell. Why? Well, that's because there was some disappointing forecasts for income from interest payments looking forward. Now, while high borrowing costs have generally bolstered net interest income for lenders, banks are bracing for potential rate cuts by the U.S. Fed later this year. And despite these challenges, JP Morgan has seen significant growth in interest income, particularly because of their acquisition of First Republic Bank last May, which added billions of dollars in loans to their balance sheets. Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan, highlighted the strength of the American economy and noted that consumers still possess excess funds, though they are waning. It wasn't all good news. He expressed caution about very significant uncertain forces, ongoing global conflicts, persistent inflationary pressures, all things that he previewed in his shareholder letter that we discussed earlier this week. And so overall, the bank took its full year interest income forecast to $89 billion. Now, that's good. It's up from $88 billion, which was their previous estimate. But the market has expectations, and it looks for how those differ from reality. And so it was below the $90.68 billion anticipated by analysts. Despite a nearly 6% drop in its shares, overall, looks like JP Morgan still had a positive quarter. But markets, remember, are forward-looking. Markets don't care about the past. They care about what's happening next. But it's also a good thing that the bank financials look strong, but JP Morgan is a powerhouse of a bank, right? Just because JP Morgan's financials look strong doesn't mean the whole system looks strong. So we really are trying to think about how this applies to the banking system more broadly. And so we take a look at the credit losses. It looks like they had provisions for nearly $2 billion in credit losses, which is down from $2.28 billion, so that's good. Trading revenue declined, which is to be expected. But on a bright side, and something that is really important, I think, from my perspective at least, is looking at how their investment bank did, right? Because when there's more deal flow, when there's more underwriting, when there's more issuances, when there's more corporate activity, that means the economy's booming. And so the investment banking revenue actually increased to 27% to $2 billion, driven primarily from debt and stock underwriting. So, you know, overall, I said it yesterday, I care less about how they did in Q1, and I care more about what they think about the future. And so I think that it was pretty mixed, but leaning towards fine. There was nothing really gloomy that came out of it. And some of it wasn't what analysts were hoping for, but that seemed to just be from a company-specific event, right? It didn't say anything broadly about the economy other than that there's an expectation at some point rates are going to be cut, at some point interest income is going to go down. So I would rate it as a neutral start to bank earnings season and not something really to be alarmed about. Now we have a live call, Bill in Northern California, who wants to talk about SWKS. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Hey, Luke. Yeah, I was actually interested in initiating a position, both as a dividend grower and as a possible trade. It's starting to come down, so I thought if we could pull back maybe around 100 or below, I would step in and then buy more if it went down. Well, what do you think on that as far as dividend growth and the general health of the company and overall?
Yeah, of course. So Skyworks is actually a company we hold for a client, so we like it. They've had some revenue fall off over the past year. I think they were down about 9 to 10% year over year, and that's really just due to the market as a whole in terms of who they're providing services to. It didn't really say anything indicative about the company itself, but it's a semiconductor chips company, right? They're a provider of chips. And so the relative strength has fallen off a little bit down to 75, and the price has fallen, but it seems pretty stable above that 100 level. It's about 101 right now. And so overall, I think now would probably be a good time to get into it. Like I said, we hold it for clients. Their cash flow is improving. Their profitability's fallen off a little bit, but that's just because costs have gone up, right? Costs across the board have gone up. And so their valuation has become pretty reasonable. It's trading at about a 2.7 price to book, a 13.7 forward-looking PDE. So, you know, I think a lot of the things that are affecting their profit margins are related to exogenous factors rather than things that are internal to the company. So I have no problem with Skyworks. Thanks
for the call. That sounds like good news for me. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Here's another question that came into the InvestTalk YouTube channel as a comment. And this question, ooh, this is an interesting one. I have a question about goodwill and intangible assets on a company's balance sheet. How do they value goodwill and intangibles? If a company values it themselves, would this be similar to a non-GAAP number? We don't often get questions that get into the deep recesses of financial accounting, but here we go. So goodwill stems from corporate acquisitions. And so when a company acquires another company, what they're paying in excess of the value of that company's assets is called goodwill. And so that's how, where goodwill starts. And so that's essentially taking into account any synergies that you can't really value on paper just by buying a company, right? Presumably someone buys a company because it's worth more combined with their company than it is alone. So that's goodwill. And so on your balance sheet, you do annual tests to see if goodwill has been impaired, in which case you would make reductions down to the fair value reporting number. So that's goodwill. It's a GAAP process. Intangible assets are non-physical assets like patents, and so trademarks, another one of them. And so there's several ways you can value them and the market values them. One is look at similar patents that from companies that have been acquired. Okay, so if there has been a purchase of a company with patents, then the acquisition can price in what those patents are worth, right? Because somebody paid for them on the market. So if that's not the case, if your company, if you're looking at a patent that hasn't been from a company that's been acquired, well, then you have to look at something comparable. Another is the income approach. You can do a DCF based upon how much money comes from that drug, for example, and how much you're projected to get out in the future from that drug for the specific trademark. And all of this, both of those methods are GAAP compliant. So if you do it differently, then you have to report it as a non-GAAP measure. But you know, generally, that is how you value intangible assets and how you value or what goodwill really means and how you account for that. Thanks for the comment. That was a good one. I like that one. Nobody really talks about financial accounting, and I'm kind of an accounting nerd in a way. Anyway, 2024 is humming along, and we are into the second quarter because it's April. And you may have noticed that we have been telling you for a while that a new market environment has taken hold. So serious investors need to be able to adjust their thinking and strategies to fit the times. Now, let me remind you that here at InvestTalk and at KPP Financial, we operate with the philosophy of independent thinking, shared success. We offer unbiased guidance and practice parallel investing where we invest alongside our clients in investment strategies that we implement for ourselves. So if you're curious about your portfolio, I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone, Skype, or GoToMeeting. You can send us a message through investtalk.com and get that set up. This is InvestTalk, and our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
Everyone's situation is different.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan.
And so are their questions.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
Each podcast is unique, and you set the agenda.
I'm wondering if now...
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin. I had a question on a company called Suncor. Ticker is SU. I was looking at it. I just had a couple questions on it. I want to get your overall opinion on if you like the company. And then I wasn't able to determine if it's a limited partnership, if you could comment on whether it is. And if you did like it, what a good buy point would be. And I'll look for your answer on the show. As always, thank you guys. I appreciate all you do.
So Suncor, ticker SU, is an integrated energy company, and they primarily derive their revenue from refining and marketing and oil. And so year to date, it's done pretty well because of it, because energy has been doing well recently. And so there's been a run up, and a lot of its potential sales revenue is going to be primarily predicated upon the price of oil, right? So looking at their sales growth over the past 5 years, it's been pretty good. Annualized growth rate of about 5%. It had a lot of growth in 2022. Oil was doing well, to be expected. And their debt levels are pretty modest, $11 billion in debt on a $49 billion market cap company. Their cash flow over the past 3 years has been improving. Their profitability has been improving. Their margins have been going up. And so their stock price has been on quite the tear this year, as to be expected, again, with how oil has been going more broadly. Now, it's kind of difficult offhand for me to see if this is a... if this is a limited partnership. So I can't help you there, unfortunately, because we have other questions and other things to get to as well. But overall, I like this company. I think if you believe that oil is going to do well, energy is going to do well, this is a fine company to invest in. I think its profit margins have been increasing in a very good way. I think its cash flow has been improving in a very good way as well. And so, you know, that coupled with the fact that they issue a decent dividend and have been buying back shares, I think this is overall a good company. Thanks for the call. Now we're going into a break, and it's Friday. I'm Luke Rion. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your financial freedom. And our work continues after this break. So get your questions in now to 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. Everybody wants a secure financial future, but getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I have a general question. It's regarding the market and 401ks. I was wondering, do you find that the market tends to bump up the day after paydays, which is every 2 weeks, people's contributions into their 401ks, and suddenly the market goes up because there's this influx into all these different mutual funds? And as a second part of that, would that be a good time to sell if the market's going to have this minor blip up in those fees, or I mean in those stock prices? Just curious how that works, or if that even is a possibility. Thanks.
So let me give you a story here. And there used to be something called the January effect. And stocks tended to outperform in January. So in order to take advantage of that, people would start buying in December. But then it became the December effect, and then the November effect. And if you see where I'm going here, my point is that if something that simple were to give you higher expected returns, someone would arbitrage it. Therefore, it is unlikely that that is the case. I haven't looked into it, but you know, different people are on different pay schedules. It's not always the case that everybody gets paid on the Friday, the second Friday of the month, whatever. Some people get paid monthly, bi-monthly, every other week. So like I said, these opportunities that can be easily arbitraged away would be. So if that was a surefire way to make money, like I said, it would be arbitraged away. But I like the creativity there. Thanks for the call. Now, before we head off, and actually before I get to this, I want to mention to the person that had a question on Suncor. I looked it up. From what I can tell, it's not an LP. It's an integrated company in Canada. So hopefully that's a good starting place and you can dive in and find out more, but just wanted to not leave you hanging there. So anyway, switching gears, let's talk about Morgan Stanley. And so multiple federal agencies, including the SEC, the Office of the Comptroller of Currency, the OCC, and other Treasury Department offices are investigating Morgan Stanley, according to a report that came out today. And they're particularly focused on the procedures for vetting clients at risk of laundering money through its extensive and really growing and grown. It's been become more and more robust over the years, their wealth management division. And so the core concerns of these investigations is that Morgan Stanley's not doing a good job confirming the identities of prospective clients or even where they got their money from. And so the SEC is alleging that Morgan Stanley doesn't do its supervisory requirements and that the bank monitors these client financial activities in a bad way. And it's particularly focused on their international clientele. And so Morgan Stanley has responded by saying they're going to enhance their compliance technology. But this isn't really enough, or really hasn't been enough, for the market. In the wake of this news, Morgan Stanley's price, mostly because their business is so tied to this division now, fell by 5%. And so what happened, and why is this something of concern to the SEC? Well, they raised a specific inquiry regarding clients that have been sanctioned, billionaires, with ties to Russia. And so this regulatory attention kind of comes at a crucial time for Morgan Stanley's wealth management division, which has, like I said, become really a pivotal part of the firm's strategy post-2008, particularly after buying E-Trade and Smith Barney, really. So these acquisitions kind of transform the bank into the powerhouse in wealth management that it is today, because they oversee, get this, $5 trillion and account for about that accounts for about half of the company's total revenue. You know, banks get regulatory scrutiny all the time. Sometimes it's justified. This time it might be. Sometimes it's not. And really, for a company the size of Morgan Stanley, it's probably not going to mean much. They maybe have a fine levied against them. They're going to have to change their practices. Either way, in the long run, it's probably not going to mean much to them. But, you know, finance and private wealth management and all of this is a trust business. It's more than just a trust between clients and the banks and the managers that help those clients, but it's also a trust that the system operates fairly. So this to me is an example of where Morgan Stanley has some room to improve. And, you know, overall, nobody wants to be in the eyes of the SEC, especially when it comes to a lack of compliance controls. So good luck to them. Best of luck to them for figuring it out. Now it's Friday and it is now time for the weekend. I'm Luke Guerrero and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Remember to tell your friends that the Invest Talk podcast is now available for free in video on YouTube. So go to our YouTube channel and check that out. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Have a good weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.